Neil is invented. What Neil describes is not. It is happening across West Midlands right now. This is their story. Transport infrastructure investment has been systematically diverted away from constituencies like Cannock Chase, leaving communities cut off, while engineers who could build the connections sit idle. The government cites budget constraints for roads that would unlock economic potential, yet the same Treasury that rations pounds for bypasses finds billions for projects concentrated in London and the South East.
I grew up in Hednesford, watching lorries crawl through our town centre because there was no proper bypass. My dad worked at Littleton Colliery until it closed, and I saw what happened when a community gets cut off from the transport links that keep it alive. That's what drew me to civil engineering. I wanted to be the person who builds the roads that stop places from being forgotten. After university at Wolverhampton, I spent 8 years working on transport projects across the Midlands. Good projects. Roads that actually mattered to people who needed to get to work, to hospital, to see family. I love the problem-solving aspect of it. How do you move traffic efficiently through a landscape that wasn't designed for modern volumes? How do you connect communities without destroying what makes them communities? Then my firm lost a series of government contracts and I was made redundant along with half the team. But I still cared about the problems we've been solving. The A460 corridor that connects Cannock to the M6 was a daily nightmare for thousands of commuters. Single carriageway for most of its length, bottlenecking at junctions that hadn't been upgraded since the 1970s. People spending an hour each way just to travel 12 miles. I'd studied this route during my working years and I knew exactly what needed to be done. Bypass the worst pinch points, upgrade 3 key junctions, add a second carriageway for the heavier sections. I approached Staffordshire County Council's Highways Department with detailed proposals. The senior engineer I met with, Sarah Hendricks, was enthusiastic. She walked me through their own internal assessment, which matched mine almost exactly. "We'd love to upgrade that route," she told me. "The business case is rock solid. The economic benefits would pay for themselves within a decade. But the Department for Transport slashed our capital budget by 40% this year. We're down to emergency repairs only." I asked if I could take the proposal further up the chain. She gave me contact details for the Department for Transport and wished me luck. "Maybe they'll listen to someone from outside the council structure," she said. I spent 3 weeks putting together a comprehensive submission for the Department for Transport. Traffic flow analysis, economic impact projections, environmental assessment, phased construction timelines, everything they could possibly need to make a decision. The response came back from a civil servant named David Morton. "Treasury spending rules mean we must prioritise London and the South East, where economic returns are highest. Your proposal does not meet current investment thresholds." I couldn't understand this logic. The economic returns for the A460 were demonstrably high. People were losing hours of productivity every day sitting in traffic. Businesses were relocating because their staff couldn't reliably reach their offices. The returns weren't theoretical, they were immediate and measurable. I decided to approach the problem from a different angle. Maybe road projects were too politically sensitive, but railway engineering might have different funding streams. The government was always talking about rail investment, levelling up, connecting the regions. I applied to retrain through a government scheme that was supposed to fast-track engineers into railway infrastructure projects. The training provider, Midlands Rail Skills Academy, initially seemed positive. They sent me detailed course materials and enrolment forms. Then, 2 weeks before the course was due to start, I received a call from the administrator, Julie Peterson. "Sorry," she said, "we've had to cancel half our courses. There's no budget for transport infrastructure training this year. The funding was cut at the last minute." This was when something started to feel wrong. I asked Julie how many people had applied for the course. 47, she said, "all qualified engineers like yourself. All ready to start immediately." The course was designed for 20 people. Even with the cuts, they could have run 2 full cohorts. I started walking around Cannock more deliberately, looking at the infrastructure with fresh eyes. I passed the old Cannock College engineering workshop where I'd done my foundation studies 15 years earlier. The building was still there, obviously maintained, but the lights were off. I peered through the windows and saw the CNC machines still in place under dust covers, lathes, welding equipment, computer terminals, everything you'd need to train transport engineers. I knocked on the main office door and spoke to the facilities manager, Margaret Walsh. She confirmed what I could see. The workshop was fully equipped and operational, but had been closed for 6 months. Budget restrictions, she said. We were told there's no funding for technical training programs. I asked if the equipment was still functional. Oh yes, she said. We run maintenance checks every month. It's all in perfect working order. That evening I was talking to my neighbour Trevor about the situation. He works in logistics and had been dealing with similar transport bottlenecks in North Warwickshire. Same story everywhere, he told me. They keep saying there's no money for transport improvements, but I've got drivers sitting idle because there's no work. I've got engineers who could design these projects in their sleep. The materials are available. What exactly is it they can't afford? Trevor's question stayed with me. I started to see the pattern clearly. The people existed. Qualified engineers losing their jobs, construction workers looking for projects, drivers with nothing to drive. The materials existed, steel, concrete, tarmac, all available from suppliers who were desperate for orders. The need existed. Thousands of people stuck in traffic every day, businesses struggling to move goods efficiently, communities cut off from opportunities. The buildings existed too, training centres with equipment gathering dust, design offices with empty desks, construction yards with machinery sitting idle. If the people existed and the buildings existed and the equipment existed and the materials existed and the need existed, what exactly was it that there was no money for? I used to accept that explanation. It sounded reasonable. Governments have budgets, budgets have limits, sometimes you can't afford things. Everyone accepts it. But then I started thinking about what money actually is. The government that issues the pound told me it could not find enough pounds to connect the people who were standing right there, ready to work, to the projects that desperately needed doing. That's like saying you can't write a cheque because you're out of ink when you're holding the pen. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills were available, whether the materials could be sourced. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. I'm still here. Still watching, still documenting what I see. I understand now that this is not just my story or just Cannock's story. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Neil experienced has a name, logical fallacy. A logical fallacy occurs when someone draws false conclusions by using flawed reasoning. The most common type is a false analogy where two fundamentally different things are compared as though they work the same way. It's like saying a goldfish bowl and the Pacific Ocean are equivalent because both contain water, ignoring the crucial differences in size, complexity, and function. Every time someone told Neil there is no money, they were committing this fallacy. They applied household budget logic to a currency issuer. A household must save pounds before spending them because it cannot create pounds. It must choose between competing priorities because its income is fixed. The UK government works the opposite way. It issues pounds by spending them. When HM Treasury authorises expenditure, new money enters circulation. The constraint is not the money supply, but the real resources available to purchase. In Neil's case, those resources were abundant. Unemployed engineers, idle construction equipment, empty training facilities, available materials. The A460 corridor could have been upgraded because the people to design it, build it, and maintain it were already there. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Cannock Chase ranks 249 out of 543 English constituencies on the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, placing it in deprivation decile 5. The constituency has 2,217 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £13.1 million, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain,